Welcome to the Great Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Dawes. In today's episode, I talk with Matt Woodside. He is a teacher in Brevard County, Florida, has been for the last 15 years. And recently he has begun to speak up about some alarming things he's been seeing there in his school and his school system related to a lot of the gender ideology that's being kind of pushed into the schools across the country. And he's a Christian who is really letting his faith, determine, how he should respond to these troubling things he's seeing. And it's a very inspiring conversation. He's I heard an interview he gave recently and thought, got to have this guy on. So I hope you find it as encouraging as I do. Very inspiring conversation for sure. But before we jump into that, let me tell you about Gold River Trading Company. You've heard me talk about them before. They are a tea company. They produce a high quality line of teas, and their latest product is family sized iced tea bags. So perfect for the summer months, so you can cool off. It's really quite delicious. I've made several batches myself, and it's another fine product from Gold River Trading Company, which is a company that shares our values. Love supporting companies that are not taking part in this woke agenda that so many companies are pushing right now. And so it's a great company to support. If you're a listener of the show, you can head over to goldriverco.com and use the keyword awakening to receive 10% off your order. So now let's jump right into my conversation with Matt. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. So I gave our listeners a little bit of an intro of who you are, but can you kind of tell us your story? You're a teacher in Florida. Is that right?
That's right. I've been a teacher in Brevard Public Schools for the last 15 years, same school, actually, in the same district. We started to see some policies change in 2016. They changed the language in our anti-harassment policy and changed the language from anti-harassment to anti-discrimination. And then they added the qualifier based on gender identity. And there were many of us that went before the board at that time and warned our board, doing this will result in the use of restrooms and locker rooms of the opposite sex.
And this was back in 2016? Yeah.
In 2016, yes.
2016, okay.
Yeah. And so we warned them, this is going to result in bathroom use. And they disregarded our warnings, and they went ahead with the language change. And so what we've been seeing over the last few years, especially this past year, myself, is the manifestation of those policies in our schools. And so we've seen kids across the district use restrooms and locker rooms of the opposite sex. And for me personally, I started with this specifically when I saw it on my campus. So,
okay. Yeah. And so,
do you want to get into that?
Yeah. So, are you seeing, is this kids that are identifying as trans and then they're using it? Or is this just kind of an indiscriminate, whoever wants to use whatever bathroom, they're going
right.
for it?
Well, we've seen all sorts of, every one of those options. At my school, how I got started was this past fall, I saw a female use our boys' restroom while a boy was in there. And when I approached the guidance counselor, who was kind of, doing some bathroom duty before school, and, she was just kind of manning the station, I asked her what just happened. She said the female is identifying as a male. And so I followed in and I saw that there was a male using the urinal, and the female student identifying as male had already gone into the stall. And so at that point, I told my administration, I can't let this happen again. This is not good for our kids. It's not safe. And so that kind of started my journey, was letting my administration know I can't let it happen. When I did that, I received a notice on official Brevard Public Schools letterhead stating that if I did prevent a kid from using the facilities of their choice, I would face disciplinary action. And so I told my administration, so be it. That's what happens. That's what happens. If I get fired for this, this is a hill I'm going to die on. And so I told my administration, I'm about to blow this situation up. I'm going to be on the news. I'm going to speak at every board meeting that I can. I'm going to raise awareness of this because people, Josh, people do not know that it's happening. People across our district, people across our state have no idea that this is taking place on their child's campuses. And so for me being on the inside, yeah, go ahead.
It's not just the bathrooms, as I understand. It's also the locker rooms.
Yes, yeah, the locker rooms. And so I can get to a specific scenario about that in a minute. And so for me, you know, it became something that I felt really called to pursue because there was nobody speaking out about this. As a Christian, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but I really do believe that these kids are made in the image of God. Created on purpose for a purpose by a God who loves them so much that he died for them. And so those of us who they've been entrusted with the care of these kids are called to love and serve them like that. And so I had to make a commitment. Listen, I'm not going to let this stand and I'm going to do everything that I can. And so as I pursued that, more and more stories started coming out across our district from teachers that are not really ready to speak out yet because of this threat of discipline. And so one of the major stories that came out, a teacher confided in me that I've worked alongside this teacher at different trainings and coaching and stuff for years. And so I really trust this person. And it's been corroborated that this teacher felt compelled by our policies to allow a female student who is identifying as a male into the male's locker room because of fear of his employment. And so when the female student entered, we need to understand that these locker rooms, many of them, are just big open areas without any obstructions. When this student, female student entered, she entered in the midst of all the middle school male students. And this middle school female student proceeded to take her shirt off in front of the male students and male PE teacher. And it was seen that this female student was wearing zero undergarments under her shirt. So the male students present and the male PE teacher in charge of supervision witnessed this student that was naked from the waist up. And so that is actually, you know, that's what nobody wants to talk about. Is that's when we talk about, you know, the rubber meeting the road here, that's what's actually taking place. And so a lot of these things are great in theory to a lot of people, but when there are those of us that are on the ground that have to open the door and vouch for these kids coming in, we are seeing, these policies are extremely dangerous. They're not compassionate. They're not loving, as those that are proponents for them would say. And so for me, it's just been a mission to try to bring as much awareness of this as possible so that we can see some change. So.
Okay, so let's back up. So these policies are introduced in 2016. At what point, how long were they in place before you decided, I got to say something?
So I didn't see anything as far as the manifestation of these policies until this past year. But last spring, our district quietly pushed out a memo that was our new LGBTQ guidance. So they constructed without any votes on anything. It just was made behind closed doors and it was pushed out to us. And on that was the locker room, bathroom use, boys playing on girls' sports teams, all kinds of stuff that nobody had any say on, but it was a direct result of the language change from anti-harassment to anti-discrimination. And so at that point, I pushed that memo out to a very, very influential mom in our community who put on social media and it got the community on fire. Like they had zero idea. Parents had no idea that this was taking place. And so I don't know what the direct correlation was, but, you know, a month or so after that, the Fairness in Women's Sports Act was passed in Florida. And, you know, now boys cannot play on girls' sports teams. So there has been progress, but there's much more to go. So
can you walk us through kind of your process? Because I know a lot of people are finding themselves in similar situations where they're seeing things. And it's not easy. It's you're risking your career. I mean, 15 years at one school is quite, you know, an accomplishment. I'm sure you've got, you know, pension to think about and all sorts of things, a family to take care of. So how did you, you know, come to that decision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that we all have to ask ourselves a few things, you know, and one of them is, number one, who do I really work for? You know, and for those of us who are Christians, the ultimate answer is God, right? We are servants of Jesus before we're servants of any man or woman on earth, right? And so for me, it became a very specific call that had no questions asked. I had to do this because I serve a God of truth and I serve a God of love. And these policies were sacrificing both. And so I had to ask myself, okay, what am I willing to lose here, right? Am I willing to lose my job or risk willing losing my soul, right? So it's like I couldn't make this compromise because, you know, the things that I would be compromising when allowing these policies, it would go against everything I believe in. And I would be teaching the kids that I've committed to teach and love the wrong things. I would be teaching them that truth doesn't matter, that you can be whatever and whoever you want, regardless of how you've been created, that they were not created on purpose. They're not created by a God who loves them and has a plan for their life. In society, rules don't matter. You can do whatever you want as long as you feel a certain way, passionate enough about it. And so I could not allow myself to be a part of the system that was pushing this. Because I'm a physical education teacher, and you know, curriculum's great. The stuff that we're supposed to teach them, obviously, fitness and health is super important. But for me, the most important thing is teaching these boys how to be men. And so that is my utmost priority when I'm at school. And there is zero way that these policies coincide with that mission. And so for me, it became a thing. Well, listen, if I get fired, I get fired. God is in control and he will take care of me. And so I would just encourage anybody out there, and I'm sure it's happening more and more wherever you work. It doesn't have to be a school, but we all need to ask ourselves what compromises are we not willing to make? Like what is the line in the sand that I will lovingly not step across? Right. Yeah. And so I think that's the challenge is, you know, whenever we do draw a line in the sand, to our culture, inherently lines are becoming more and more hateful, just the existence of lines. Yeah. But love is not mutually exclusive from boundaries. Right. And so, sometimes the most loving thing we can do is to say no. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if a kid wants to just eat candy, for dinner every night and never eat any good nutrients and protein and carbs and fats and things that they need, it would not be loving for us to say, sure, go ahead, eat the Skittles, right? No, it's those of us that know better, we're called to lead people into truth, into goodness, and that's called love. And so I think that the challenge is to retake some of these words that I think segments of our society have hijacked, like love and compassion and truth. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge, but it's worth taking. So,
yeah. What has been the reaction from your fellow teachers? By and large, are the teachers supporting these policies, or is it kind of everybody's kind of afraid to say something?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, there's a lot of these teachers are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down, you know, into their job. They've got pensions, like you said, to think about. They've got families, they got mouths to feed. And so there's this apprehensive, pushing against it, but a lot of teachers are struggling to publicly come out at this point for fear for losing their jobs. And so, but many have reached out to me, say, you know, you go get them, what's how I go. And I'm very appreciative. And at the same time, I'm looking forward to the day that momentum can build where more and more teachers and more school administrators and more, you know, officials at the county level are going to speak up. And put pressure on those that can actually make change, which is obviously our school board. But, you know, for me, most importantly, and I'm not trying to get further down the road in the interview, but the biggest thing for me that I've been pushing is legislative change. Because, you know, a board can make policies that the next board, when elected, can just reverse. And so, for me, the biggest goal is to see change at the legislative level. And so, you know, I've been in contact with many of our legislators, trying to get in contact with our governor. And so enough people need to put enough pressure on those that can make change so that way, you know, we can see the change that's going to protect our kids. So
that goes into like, what can, you know, this is something that, you know, we're seeing all over the country, you know, different school boards are really pushing this kind of ideology into the classroom. What can parents do to maybe partner with teachers to stand against this stuff? You know, you mentioned legislation. Is there particular legislation that needs to be passed?
Yeah. So that's a great question because parents, what we learned in you know, this past Virginia gubernatorial race was that parents, when they want to, can take over. They took over that race. Those parents in Loudoun County and all over Virginia, and that race quickly became about education because certain scenarios happened because of these types of policies where tragedy ensued, sexual assault, and parents said, you know what, enough's enough. And so parents need to, and they are starting to in Florida, realize just how powerful their voice is. They are the change that we need, right? The parents are the primary stakeholder in a child's education outside of the child. They have the most at stake. They have the most to lose. And it's their voices that we are starting to see start to speak up more and more, and it needs to happen more and more. So how can we partner? We need teachers to speak up and let parents know that this is actually happening. Whether it's on private messaging, on social media, calling, reaching out, whatever, if you're not ready to publicly speak out yet, I would encourage every teacher to ask, am I being as accountable to these parents as I'm supposed to be? Because when parents drop their kids off at school, they're entrusting us with the care of these kids. And we are called to be transparently accountable to how we are caring for their kids. And when policies are put in place that are putting their kids in danger, they deserve to know. And so I will call on teachers to let these parents know and let these parents do their job because they are the ones that can actually make the change. I would encourage those parents to call their legislators, demand to speak to those that can make change. I would encourage them to join parental organizations around their communities that are for the change that these kids need, that are proponents for kids, like groups like Monster Liberty, and we've got many of groups like that in our area. And then I would obviously, it starts at the local level. I'm going big picture here, but obviously parents need to call their schools and ask them, is this taking place on their campus? And you know what they're going to get? They're going to get, we're not allowed to talk about it, which is going to give them ammunition to tell their legislators, my school is not telling me anything. They're refusing to tell me anything because they will not. And so it needs to be a concerted effort. And the good news is when parents get behind an issue, things change. I just hope that we in Brevard County in Florida do not wait for that sexual assault to happen like we saw in Loudoun County, that we see, okay, it happened, it's dangerous, let's take the reins and have some foresight instead of being retroactively correcting on this. Let's do it before it happens here in Florida, because we know we're throwing our sheep to the wolves.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think that's so important that, you know, parents and Christian parents, especially, get involved. So many, you know, I think Christians look at things, issues like this, and they think, oh, that's very culture war. I just want to focus on the gospel and loving people. And, you know, I want to help people see that this is how we love these kids who are being, you know, groomed, for lack of a better word, into lowering their, you know, becoming comfortable in situations they shouldn't be comfortable in, because they should be protected from sexual, you know, interactions or lowering those inhibitions in front of the opposite sex. This is, you know, it's not loving to just look away when this stuff is happening.
No, and I think you are exactly right. And I would say that caring about the gospel and caring about kids' physical safety, they are not mutually exclusive, right? Because Jesus calls us to love everybody. And Jesus gives us special warnings about causing kids to stumble, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to learn about how serious Jesus is about causing kids to stumble and the threat of it, it would be better for you to just be dragged to the bottom of the ocean, right? Than for you to make one of these young ones stumble and not let them come to me. And so I think that there needs to be a seriousness to this, that it's, you know, parents don't say, well, it's in somebody else's district. Well, no, if the policy is in your district or it's available in the state or in your schools and the district, a lot of that's going to happen. It's coming to your doorstep. It's already there. And so I would say that you are exactly right. Loving our kids involves ensuring their physical safety, right? We don't say Jesus loves you and you need to repent of your sins. Now go and be on your way and good luck. Good luck out there as you're navigating this world that's putting you in danger physically. And so no, it's a holistic approach as we say, you know what? We can be Christian citizens while we are here, right? We can be caring about the gospel and civic issues, because those civic issues are immediate, and throwing our kids in danger is, like you just said, it's the opposite of loving. It's like we're lying to them. We care about you. Jesus loves you. We want to tell you the gospel. You need to be redeemed, and you are cherished in the eyes of God. Like, you are a child of God, created on purpose. But we're actually just going to let this happen. Like, we're lying to them, right? And so it needs to be both. So
it's such a you said, oh, that's something that's happening in another district. These policies are being pushed nationwide, and they are progressive. It sounds really nice and inclusive, and we're just trying to be loving. And Christians, we have to understand that there's a trajectory to this. It's not the goal is not just to let's change the language to be gender inclusive. It's pushing towards a complete indoctrination of kids with these radical ideologies, and it's putting them in harm's way. And Christians have to become comfortable being seen as unloving by the world, because when you stand up against this, that's what you're going to get hit with. Oh, you're just a bigot. You're a transphobe. You're homophobic. And we've just got to be okay with that. We've got to know in our heart that we're doing this out of love for these kids, because we want to protect them from these predators that are trying to capture their minds.
Right.
And,
you're exactly right. I mean, I think here's the deal. Jesus has warned from the beginning, they're going to hate you because they hated me first. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the hatred of the world should not be the thing that is deterring us from pursuing truth. Right. Yep. The world's going to hate if you voice what Jesus has said is true. That's been proven for 2,000 plus years. And so if we are looking to be praised by men, by this world, we're not going to be doing the right thing. The Bible makes that clear, right? Either we're going to hate this world, so to speak, or hate the kingdom, right? And so we need to love the kingdom that helps us to love the world correctly, right? To speak truth to them. And so I think that we need to understand that, when we say hate the world, we're not saying we hate people. We're hating the system, the sin that has just, it's perverted the world, right? And so these people that we're called to love, I want to make that very clear. Like, we are called to love them with truth. And it's not hateful, like you said, to speak truth. And you are going to be called a bigot. You're going to be called the words under the sun. But we need to remember that those words of those people, they don't define us. The word of the Lord defines us. And so the way that we engage just needs to be loving, right? The way that we say truth, the way that we say these true things needs to be just covered in grace, right? Mm-hmm. And coupled with, I believe this because you are so valuable in the eyes of God. You are purchased by the Son of God, right? And so we need to say our message and not just hammer truth at people, but let them know it's because you are loved that we can't stand for these policies, And so, or whatever policy or whatever, initiative that at your workplace or in life that we're going to come across, it's our job as Christians to engage this culture with truth and love. So
how can churches come around people like you that are fighting these battles in the workplace and the education system? How can churches support you and make sure that, hey, we got your back?
That's a good question. I think you know, church from the beginning has always been a grassroots thing. It's been person to person to person, right? A church is a group of people, right? And so I think it's super important that we are, number one, we are engaged weekly in a local church, that we are plugged in to a local church. And in doing so, we're plugged into a fellowship of single believers, right? Like people, right? That we can name, that are praying for us, that have our back. And so I have so many people that have come alongside me at my church, and it has meant so much, because they'll find me on a weekly basis. Hey, I saw the speak engagement you did here or whatever. And they've been so encouraged. And I can't tell you how much it means to me, and how much, you know, it gives you fuel to, you know what, this does mean something, right? I'm not alone in believing these things, right? There is an army of people that are like, guys, well, this is what we need to know. When people speak truth and stand and say, you know what, I'm not budging, guys, that does something to people. Like that causes our hearts to beat fast. You know what? I can do that now. Like, yeah. It's you know, one of my good friends says, courage breeds courage. And so when we see other people stepping up and see the people, you know what, I'm not gonna budge. Truth matters. It causes other people to be willing, you know what, maybe I can do that. And so at my church, it's been so encouraging to see my specific people that I can name coming up to me and just encouraging me. And so I would say, number one, get plugged into your local church. Let them know what's going on. Let them know, like, fill them in on your struggles, fill them in on your challenges, on what you're called to speak on, and get invested with these people so that they can encourage you. And so then those of us that are in the local body and we see people stepping out and we see people, you know, having a moment of courage and bravery, that we need to encourage them by name. We need to reach out to them and let them know. I mean, if you could see my social media private, there's been an outpouring of support from people in my church, people in my community, of saying, you know what, we're with you. And so what I've learned in this is there are more people than I thought that are against these policies. It seems to be the vast majority of people are led by common sense on this thing, that this is not good for our kids. And so I would say, whatever it is, don't let fear cripple your pursuit in going after the truth and exposing it in a way that loves people. I would say, be encouraged. It's been done before. Namely by a man named Jesus. And so I would say, let's follow his footsteps and ask, you know, just be praying, be led by the Holy Spirit. Lord, what would you have me do here? And if it is step up, if it is speak, then speak.
Yeah, that's great. And I think too, that churches can just assure you that if your fears come to fruition, if this means you lose your job, we've got your back. You know, you're not going to go hungry. We're going to take care of you until the next thing opens up. And I really believe that, you know, as we are bold in this, God is going to reward that. God, you know, my brother recently, you know, made some bold statements on social media about an experience he went through, and just seeing the good that has come from that, of just the simple act of speaking the truth boldly, unashamedly, and it's already, you know, already seeing God like bring some things together that wouldn't have happened if he hadn't have taken that step. So I would, you know,
that's awesome.
Encourage anyone listening, you know, be like Matt here and speak up. You know, it's courage begets courage. And I think that's a great, great place to land this plane. Is there any thing you want to direct people to? Can they find you on social media?
Well, I historically have not been very big on social media. I just recently have been on Facebook more, posting stuff. But what I would direct people to do, if they do care about these issues, especially those of us in Florida, you know, even states wherever you live, I would look at Senate Bill 615, Oklahoma Senate Bill 615, where Oklahoma laid out a great framework for states that want to eliminate these practices in their state and eliminating boys and girls using restrooms and locker rooms of the opposite sex. And then I would encourage all of us to reach out to our lawmakers and encourage them strongly to take the same measures in their state. We need to see a flood of common sense proposals that are for the good of our kids to start taking shape. Last but not least, Florida has done a great job with a couple of their measures as far as the parental rights and education bill to prevent against indoctrination in the classroom and not allowing parents to know what's going on with sensitive conversations with their guidance counselors, all kinds of stuff. And also the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which prevents, you know, boys from playing on girls' sports teams. But what I would say as far as that is concerned is that is one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is what are we doing while the kids prepare for that athletic activity, while they're in the locker room, while they're at their most vulnerable state all day, when they're exposed, when their pants are down, their shirts are off. Let's not just protect the actual competitive event. Let's protect them at all times, especially when they are at their most vulnerable. So that's the next step that we need to see our legislators make, is protecting our kids when they're at their most vulnerable, because it is the most loving thing that we can do.
Well, thanks so much. This has been really helpful information, Matt. And I know this is going to encourage a lot of people. So I appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate you having me on, Josh. Thank you.
That's our show for today. Big thanks to Matt Woodside for joining me on the show. I loved having Matt on because he's not an author. He's not, you know, anyone that's, you know, pushing anything. He's not trying to sell books or build a platform. He's just a concerned citizen who saw something that was wrong, and he stood up and said something. And you know, he's a Christian who's bringing his faith to work, and that's what we're called to do as Christians. It's not just a Sunday thing that we can compartmentalize. No, our faith should inform every aspect of our life, and that's going to, yeah, as the culture becomes increasingly hostile and increasingly against the things of God, that's going to require more and more of us in our workplaces. And I think Matt is a great example of how to do that and how to trust God with the results of, you know, and the consequences of speaking out. And, you know, I hope his courage has inspired you. I know it's encouraged me. And, you know, I would encourage you to go out this week and just be bold. You know, speak the truth, share your faith at work. Don't keep it hidden under a bushel. That's not what we're called to as Christians. And I appreciate Matt for giving us a great example there. If you are watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit like and subscribe. Hit that bell so you can be notified of new content. If you're listening on podcast, go ahead and give us a rating over at Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating and review. Is really helpful to getting the word out and getting the podcast to more people. As always, I welcome any and all feedback. Best place to find me is at Twitter, at Josh Dawes. My DMs are open. If you want to send me a private message or you want to share this content, go ahead and tag me and I'll give you a like. So appreciate all you do to share this podcast with others. So until next time, I will see you soon.